whfr.fm or at www.whfr.fm on the internet. Come on, it'll be fun.
They ask for more. What do you think this fan club is for?
One day I'll get this terrible pain in my hands. Another day my face is swollen. It's so frustrating. I've never felt so scared and alone. I want answers.
I want answers. My hair's falling out. You know how embarrassing that is? It feels like I'm going crazy. I need to know what's going on.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
The 5101 Restaurant is Henry Ford Community College's innovative on-campus dining experience. The restaurant is operated by students and staff of HFCC's Hospitality Studies program and offers a learning experience for the students combined with a delicious and affordable meal for you. The 5101 is open Tuesday through Thursday from 11:15 a.m. to 1 p.m. and Wednesday and Thursday evenings from 6 p.m. to 7:45. Reservations are suggested and can be made at 313-206-5101. That's 313-206-5101. See you soon at HFCC's 5101 Restaurant.
Computer Information Systems Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
Love to design stuff and play on the internet? Henry Ford Community College offers a one-year certificate program in web technologies and design. Advanced HTML, computer art, web authoring tools, and web multimedia are a few of the courses offered.
Computer Information Systems Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
The program is designed to prepare a student to take CIW Certificate Internet Webmaster exams.
For more information on CIW exams, log on to www.ciwcertified.com.
Drop by the HFCC Counseling Office or log on to the web at hfcc.edu.
Computer Information Systems Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
The views and opinions expressed on the following show are not necessarily those of this radio station or Henry Ford Community College. Good afternoon. This is the program called Metaphysically Speaking, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. I'm your host for this program, Mike Holloway, and my special guest this month is Barbara White, and she is a spiritual teacher, author, an inspirational speaker, not to mention an all-around groovy type person. I think she said that I should say that. I don't know. Anyway, Barbara, thank you for being on the show, and how are you?
I'm doing wonderful, and I'm feeling very groovy. Thank you.
Really? Okay, well, that's good. It's good to feel groovy. Well, first of all, I want to comment on an article you wrote recently for the Body, Mind, Spirit Guide. And it's an article entitled, The World Needs You. Is that true? The world does need you?
I think we all inherently think that we don't matter in our lives. We think that what we do, what we think, who we are is not important. And the message of the article is that every person is important. And why they're important is because the power that somebody can have when they not only intend love, but they realize themselves more as love or beauty or truth. I like the quote in the beginning of the article that Ram Dass says. He says, do everything that you can to relieve human suffering, and see the perfection in it, even your need to get rid of it. And the reason why that quote is so powerful, do everything you can to relieve human suffering and see the perfection in it. So see the perfection in suffering. And somebody would say, what do you mean see the perfection in my illness, see the perfection in this pain I'm experiencing? How the heck would you do that? And if you don't see the perfection in suffering, what happens is you not only you'll feel hopeless, or you become a bleeding heart, like running around and giving money to the whales and giving money to this and feeling like it's never enough. So you either feel hopeless or you feel like you're never doing enough, or maybe a combination of the both. The other part of it, if you see only the perfection in the suffering and you don't do everything to relieve it, meaning you don't come from compassion, what happens in that, you have somebody that like trips in front of you and you just say karma. It was their choice. So it's both. It's being able to know that there's perfection in the suffering, but yet to come from compassion and do everything you can to relieve it. And what the article does talk about is that really starts with our own inner work. Because if we cannot witness our own dark spots, and we have, what I mean by that is our fears, our whatever we find, our perceived unlovabilities. And if we can't witness those perceived unlovabilities and bring them back into wholeness through compassionate witnessing, we won't be able to see the darkness of the world and see the perfection in it. So it really is as simple as 5 minutes of meditation a day, or even just a willingness to forgive yourself. But 5 minutes of meditation a day of witnessing those dark spots, the fears, the insecurities, because there's going to be another layer every day. And what happens when somebody does that is they're able to see, they begin to see the harmony in the chaos. They begin to see that we're not living in such a hopeless world.
Mm-hmm. And we have to have hope, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
No hope and we're in trouble. Well, let's talk about those dark spots. If somebody is truly, truly hurting, maybe they are very unhappy with their physical condition, whatever that might be. Maybe they've been in a terrible accident and they're suffering some terrible tragedy. What do you say to those people to raise their spirits?
First thing I would say to that person is I would say where they are, God is. That we don't live in a void. And that God has not forgotten you. And when I speak of God, I don't mean an anthropomorphic God of hands and feet. I mean a God of your awareness, a God of your being. God is in love, beauty, truth, and joy. And not a God that is a mushy God. Or a lot of times when we think of love as mushy and weak. And we think of peace as weak. So when I mean God, I mean that love that is powerful, that presence. So I would remind them that they don't live in a vacuum, that God knows this presence, this creational force, knows what they're going through and has not forsaken them. And just as that quote goes, where every angel bends over that blade of grass and tells it to grow, that the divine is working in their life. And if they can even for a moment begin to open up to that, and if for a moment they can say, I feel one of the most powerful statements that somebody can say is, well, first people try to see the good in it. You know, they try to make lemons into lemonade. But rather than doing that, they can say, I'm willing to see the blessing in this. I'm willing to see the good in it. Because our mind doesn't let us see something differently, right? The mind's kind of like the horse with the blinders on it and says, okay, this is the way that I see this. And even if the way that we're seeing it is bringing us great suffering and great pain, our mind is overly helpful and says, okay, this is the way it is, and this is never going to change. So that suffering, even though it's caught, that way of looking at it, which is causing us suffering, won't let go. And so a way to get the mind to get its grip off and really open up to a greater reality, or open up to that love and support that's always, always, always around somebody if they open up, is I'm willing to see the blessing in this. I'm willing to see the good in it. So I would say to them, where they are, God is, and be willing to see the good in it. And not that you have to see it instantaneously. If you even woke up every morning and you say, please, God, help me to see the good in this. Because I know that I'm... See, a lot of people don't think they live in a friendly universe. They really believe they're in a world that's out to get them, and that they're going to be attacked, and that it's a fighter, it's a kind of a Darwinian type life where you have to just do the best you can every day to survive, and that's it. But I feel, and I've experienced, and what I've seen when people open up to this, I've experienced this, this is just not in theory, not only in my own life, but in people that have opened up to allowing that creational force or that God of their understanding to work in their life. And so when people are in that energy of just the survival energy, that's going to be their existence. And they're not in that survival energy, they're feeling like all this bad that's happening to them, whether it be their finances or the illness. They feel like, in a way, they feel like they're being punished. And there's kind of more stories to that, but not only are they in a place of fight or flight. Thank you, fight or flight. But they're also believing that it's kind of their fault, too. Nothing really has power to affect our happiness unless it's attached to our self-worthiness. And that's why self-acceptance is so powerful, is unless we're basing something on our worthiness, so whether it be internal or external, it has power to affect our happiness. So when we begin to say, I'm loved as I am, I am already loved by this benevolent, loving force, we begin to be able to see that it's a friendly universe. We begin to not feel like there's a God in the sky, like a Santa Claus God that's rewarding only good little girls and punishing, good little girls and boys and punishing bad little girls and boys. We realize that it's not a Santa Claus God, meaning it's a God that loves all things and all people, not just one group of people or not just people that follow these rules, that omnipotent, omnipresence means everywhere in its fullness, but not in one place. Mm-hmm. So everywhere in its fullness, but not in one place. And when people realize that they are so important to being able to affect change in their family. I had a great session the other day with a 15-year-old. And I began the session with saying, okay, you have really two selves. You have this little self that's kind of like a pet. That's your mind, body, and emotion. And then you have this bigger self that's your divine gifts, your beauty, your smile, your creativity, the real you. And when you look at that human self, mind, body, and emotion, kind of like a pet, you wouldn't whip your pet. You wouldn't beat up your pet for being sad or mad. And so learning how to nurture that human self or that pet allows that bigger self to come in. And I like to say that it's as you accept your humanity, you know your divinity. So people see acceptance, again, as this mushy, squishy thing, but it's not. When you accept your humanity, you accept that, you know what, I'm insecure at times. You know what, I doubt myself at times. You know, sometimes I even darn right hate myself at times. And as you begin to forgive that and accept that, it takes your energetic focus off of it. And what takes hold is your authentic self or your divine identity or that bigger self. And it was so amazing with that session with that young girl, because as I was explaining this to her, she goes, okay. And then I could feel she was kind of being forced to be there. And I said, you know, I can't help you unless you're willing. I can't do anything. I could be Jesus Christ himself and I can't help you. And she began to understand that, because, I mean, that's really an important concept, that unless we're willing, unless we say, okay, I'm willing to see this differently or I'm willing to grow, nothing can happen in our life. So that, many different spiritual teachings talk about free will. And it's really, really important. But the miracle is the moment we choose to grow or the moment that we are willing to love ourselves, the divine intelligence takes over. So kind of like how a cut in our arm knows how to heal, there's an intelligence within that cut. It's the same thing in our lives. When we're willing to heal or we're willing to love ourselves, that takes over. So I was explaining to her that I couldn't help her unless she was willing. And so then the moment she's kind of a little tiny willingness came in, she had this huge, beautiful release. And then at the end of the session, she really let out what was causing her a lot of pain, which was she was really sad she couldn't save her mom or help her mom. And this beautiful circle came in the end, because I said, you got how I can't help you unless you're willing to grow and heal. And she shook her head yes. And I go, and now you understand how you can't help your mom unless she's willing. And you saw this light bulb go off in her heart. And then I said, but in your willingness to heal and your willingness to grow, you are going to directly help your mother. You're going to show her by your living example how to step out of this drama. And it was so beautiful, because this young girl, you saw her get it. You saw her go, oh, you mean I can't go in and rescue my mom and try to pull the puzzle pieces together? I just, what I have control and power over, but it's very powerful,
right,
is to accept myself.
Right. In other words, you have to save yourself first, in essence,
yeah,
before you can save somebody else.
Absolutely. And a lot of times, exactly, a lot of times when we do that, you know, even the airplanes, they have the mask. Yeah,
right,
put the mask,
yeah,
on your mouth,
right,
before you.
Right.
But a lot of times when we do that, the person that we thought we needed to rescue actually begins to heal without us doing anything. I had a session many years ago. It was a man that was trying to rescue his wife and his dad, and he got that understanding that he really needed to focus on taking care of himself and working with his fears and working with his lack of happiness and inner peace. And as he began to work on that, his wife had a healing, and so did his dad. And it was like, you know how when you have those breakthroughs and you go, oh, is that what this is about? So he had that epiphany or that aha, and within 24 hours, both his dad and the people that he was trying to rescue began to do better. And then as if the universe just wanted to put a big cherry on the sundae, I think it was like 2 days later, his wife said to him, you know, when you're around, I feel better now. It was like, it was just
right.
Beautiful.
It's like synchronicity in a manner of speaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
It all works together.
Well, synchronicity and that we're all connected, and that we just can't, like the Course in Miracles talks about, we can't heal alone. Like we accept the negative part of it. You know, we accept that when somebody's in a really bad place, they have the power to hurt the whole business. You know, like somebody can be a bad apple and affect the whole energy of the business, or somebody can have a really have a lot of pain inside and then vomit that out around all those people around them. They can hurt the whole energy of a family. So we kind of, it's like we're more, oh yeah, I accept that. But then we don't accept the other side, which is someone can powerfully heal their family by their own inner work. Like I saw that in my own life. I've seen my sister powerfully. Now she did the work and I'm so happy for her, but she powerfully shifted her dynamic and her relationships when she saw me shifting it. And it was, it was directly from my example. It wasn't, it wasn't that I lectured her. I think too often we're running around on these soapboxes thinking that we need to offer people our good advice, and we have good intentions, but a lot of times we're coming from that energy of fixing and trying to rescue somebody. And if we have any energy of fear or worry when we talk to somebody or we offer them our good advice, we're actually adding to the problem we're trying to fix. So it's like really and really important to come from an inner place of peace, an inner place of acceptance when we're trying to help another or offer advice to another, because we're actually empowering the illness if we don't. And any action that we take that's not from a state of inner peace is actually violence against ourselves and violence against the other person.
Mm-hmm. Just real briefly, I want to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. This month, my special guest is Barbara White. She's a spiritual teacher, author, and inspirational speaker. So, in other words, getting back to what you were just saying, is you can lead by example. You don't have to always beat somebody over the head with a certain message, like, this is for your own good, you idiot. Can't you get it? I mean, I would imagine sometimes if you get frustrated, that's the route you might take. Maybe not.
Yeah, I like how, because that's what probably a lot of people are thinking, you know, so I love that you brought that forward. I think the number one distraction on our own self-growth and self-healing process is the need to rescue another. Like, and people think self-love is selfish, and what I think is selfish, my definition of selfish is you change so I feel better. You know, you've got to change so I can be happy. I think that's selfish.
Mm-hmm.
So I think self-love is actually the opposite of that. Self-love or self-acceptance or self-realization, which means to journal every day and vomit on the page, to witness your thoughts, to love and accept that humanness, that craziness inside, to take responsibility for what you're feeling, knowing that no one has the power to make you feel a certain way. Your feelings are yours to heal and yours to own. So I really think the number one distraction we have, because our mind separate from our divine identity, or it's also called the ego, our mind separate from God or our divine self or authentic self, really is designed to keep us in the same place. And it will do anything to keep us from growing. And I feel the number one distraction is that focus on another person. And I have noticed, like, I have a 9-month self-acceptance teachers program, which is phenomenal. And when people first start really getting the power of this, of self-acceptance, they start wanting to preach to everybody around them. And everyone around them pretty much ignores them. Because people can feel if you're saying it to prove or convince. People can really, even people that are totally haven't really done any meditation or any self-growth, they can feel if you're coming from an authentic place. Is it really your truth? Are you really, is this what you live? Is this what you embody? And the beautiful thing is, when you begin to embody it, when you begin to feel peace as you, when you begin to feel all these wonderful awakenings and your that stillness and that presence to that universal energy, you have people just start asking for your advice. You have people that, and I'm sure you've experienced that as well, where you just start walking on the path and all of a sudden you have people walk up to you and ask you about the very thing that you just solved within your own consciousness. You have somebody walk up to you and say, let's say you just release the need for approval and you realize, oh my God, I'm seeking approval from everyone around me, and boy, I'm such a pleaser. Oh my gosh. And you forgave yourself for that. And you saw that you've been seeking that approval in other people, and that's what you did with your parents, and you feel and love that insecurity underneath. And then from all of that, you realize you are a lot more wonderful than you realize, that you don't need these people's approval, and that you're pretty good. You realize that you're a nice person. You like who you are. I mean, just another wave of that. And so as you realize that, the very next day somebody walks up to you and says, you know, I just can't seem to stop seeking everyone's approval. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. And so the beautiful part is when you really realize these things for yourself, you don't have to preach to people. They'll come up to you.
Mm-hmm. It's like somebody gets religion and all of a sudden, you know, they want to tell everybody, wow, this is the way it should be, or it could mm-hmm. be, whatever the case may be. But also something you touched on, when you do change, sometimes you also repel people away from you because you're not trying to please them anymore. Maybe mommy and daddy, well, you're not trying to be the perfect little boy or little girl, whatever the case may be. And as a result, they may get upset with you, friends, family, whatever the case may be. Does this happen quite often?
I like that. Yeah, you're right. And that when you do change, sometimes you have to let go of relationships that don't serve. The beautiful side of that is that as you shift and grow, the people that do support you and uplift you will be drawn closer. So there is a period in your growth process where you're like, you know, this person isn't really serving me, and they just want to keep on talking, commiserating about their misery, and they're not really interested of looking within and letting go of any limiting beliefs. They have a normality of negativity. They're really not looking to change and grow, and they haven't broken their agreements with mediocrity. And so that kind of person that's kind of choosing to stay in that place and not saying, I'm willing to grow, I'm willing to heal, you'll have to let go of. Or they just, as you said, they're repelled by you. So I like what the words you use, because that really ties into how self-love, self-respect is the greatest protective force you can ever have. So like as you love and respect yourself, you vibrationally teach others how to treat you. It's kind of like if somebody was to see me, they kind of know they can't take advantage of me. They just can feel it. They can feel that confidence. They can feel that I like myself, you know, and they can feel that energy, and like they can feel that from you as well. So it's self-respect, self-love is the greatest protector in this world. People are so worried about, you know, monitoring everybody and kind of sizing people up and judging people to make sure that they're safe in this world. And if they realized, again, you know, I'm coming back, I sound like a broken record, but if they realized that if they just started to do their inner work, that inner work would create a protective field around their energy, and they wouldn't have to be sitting there monitoring everybody, judging everybody, and, you know, like like they say in the streets, sizing somebody up, or there's different terms where, you know, like kind of judging them, sizing them. Oh, I'm a good reader, people. Well, you don't have to sit there read everybody if you just focused on yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that initially, though, that's the really scary part, is trying to change and knowing that, you know, you could really upset somebody that's special to you, that you love. But again, I think once you reach a certain point, like you said, they start to come around to your way of thinking. Either that or they will be out of your life, whatever works. But I think they do come to respect that other person, knowing that, well, you know, I can't take advantage of so-and-so anymore. So therefore, I must respect them.
Yeah, yeah, and it sounds like you've experienced that, and I think all of us on the path have experienced where that relationship that that person didn't want to grow with us, they either leave or they grow with us, and I think that beautifully ties into the core of everyone's fear when they really begin to embrace their authentic self, which is, if I shine, I may shine alone.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, too, I think also other people really, once they realize the change and they don't like what's happening, they can make your life even worse, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And there's many more lessons to be learned and to be taught as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think we have to make a choice to either be happy or fit in. And there is a scary part. It's like a pivotal moment in the growth process, because the growth process is really, even though there's different modalities, it's really the same for everybody. There's a point in the growth process of accepting your true divine identity, or your authentic self, or your gifts, or your worthiness, where you have to say, okay, I'm really scared right now that if I continue on this path, I'm not going to be with this person, or this thing's going to leave me. But I choose love. I choose myself. I choose to break my agreements with mediocrity. That's when that devotion and that commitment comes in. And I forget who said the saying. It might have been Ram Dass, but I don't think so. Maybe it was Rumi. But the saying is, on the path, a person has to crave their spirit or crave God as much as a drowning man craves water. And so there is that need, that devotion to your own growth. And the truth is, as you shine your light, you'll draw in other lights. Or as you claim yourself or allow yourself to become who you truly are, you will eventually draw in more people. There is that time that you talk about where it's like the relationship that you've been in for many years, or the friend that you've had for many years, all of a sudden there is that chaos. And they're scared. The other person's scared, because when you sit there and shine your light, you reflect back for that person their dark spots that they haven't dealt with. And so they're not trying to hold you back because they're malicious. They're just trying to hold you back because they're scared.
Right.
They're really scared because they can feel. I mean, that's why I'm so ferocious about my own inner growth and meditate 2-3 hours a day and have been doing that my entire life, because I just sit in front of somebody and they start evolving and healing. I'm not doing anything. It's just because I've loved and accepted my own craziness. I love the crazy. I've made friends with my inner demons that when I sit in front of somebody in session or a workshop, they just start to have these spontaneous releases. But to what you're talking about, that's what happens when we're on the path, is we become a mirror for other people, and their stuff starts coming up, and it scares them. So they either deny it and they suppress it, or that stuff will start coming up and they run away. Like I had, when I didn't understand this concept, when I first started doing this healing work, I had somebody go, oh my God, I don't know what's coming up, oh my God. And they actually ran out of my office. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, and I'm like kind of looking at myself like, what did I do?
Yeah.
And then I realized that how powerful self-love was.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, it's their reaction, not really what you're doing, but like you say, you're mirroring something to them.
Yes.
And they're seeing that, and whatever it is, they may not like it or accept it.
Yeah, and they'll think, you know, especially when you're in relationship. So I'm talking in the context of a session. When you're in relationship and you're offering just a pure light, and their stuff is coming up, they'll try to blame you for it, or they'll try to say it's your fault. But I think, though, because we're not victims unless we choose to be, that if that person is continuing to vomit their stuff and their pain on you and you're staying in the relationship, there's a need for you to be there. And I like to say that it's we prove to ourselves that we're going to be true to ourselves. So if we're in a relationship where we're being really disrespected and we're staying there, it's because we haven't really learned how to love and respect ourselves, which that's the benefit, right? So that's the benefit of that person is a teacher, and as they keep on disrespecting you and you stay there, that's a beautiful classroom. It's a beautiful class of learning how to love and respect yourself.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've used the word vomit several times now, and I know you don't literally mean vomit, but perhaps you could explain what it is, what you mean when you use that word. Because, you know, people are thinking, what? You're getting sick on people? No, that's a little extreme, isn't it?
Thank you for saying that, because you're right. There's people that are thinking that. What I mean by vomit is projecting. So we're like a projector. And so if I feel pain inside and I feel insecure and then somebody is there, I'm going to attack them for something that I think is about them, but it's really my own pain. So, or if I'm angry with myself of a choice that I made many years ago and I don't realize that, I'm going to vomit, per se, or project that anger on that person around me. You know, it's taking the path of the spiritual warrior has to be paired with self-acceptance, radical self-acceptance, because I like to say the path of the spiritual warrior is when you say no one has the power to make me feel any certain way. So I give the analogy of, like, if I believed I had an ugly kneecap and somebody said, Barbara, you have an ugly kneecap, I get my insecurity triggered, but was it really that person, or was it my insecurity? And if I own that, I cross over the threshold and I begin to own my emotions and say, no, that's my insecurity, and I love that insecurity. I take time to journal it. And when I say vomit on the page, I mean just whatever is coming out, because as you put it on a page and you compassionately witness it, it begins to heal. Or in being the spiritual warrior, if I choose not to be the spiritual warrior and somebody says I have an ugly kneecap and I believe that and they trigger pain and insecurity, I say, oh, you made me feel that way. So in being the spiritual warrior means you accept those emotions that are triggered and you love them and allow them. But let's say I don't have an insecurity about my kneecap and that person says, Barbara, you have an ugly kneecap, then they don't have the power to do that. Now, that really simple analogy has really a broad spectrum, because if you really took that really powerful principle of no one has the power to make me feel any certain way, and you applied that into your relationships, and you applied that into your work, and you applied that into the traffic, and you applied that into the weather, and you applied that into all these different areas, you have to pair that with really powerful self-acceptance, because you realize, oh my God, I'm not a victim. I can choose how I feel. And I can be happy right now. I can be happy where I stand. I don't need to let conditions and circumstances and my spouse and all these things that I thought dictated how I feel. I have the power to be happy right now. Oh, my gosh.
What a breakthrough. Well, that's interesting, too, though. I mean, it's also their opinion. And, I mean, it's their opinion, and they are entitled to it.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean, like you say, you buy into it, you believe it. You don't have to listen to them whatsoever, you know. So I think that, again, is a personal choice. And another word I want to get back to that you've been using quite a bit is willing. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to change. How do you get to that point to even be willing?
Mm-hmm. Great question. When the pain of remaining where you are is so great that you are willing to face that little fear, that little pain of growing. So a lot of times pain is a great motivator. It's, you know, we do have a choice to grow through inspiration and joy and insight. So to grow through insight and revelation versus pain and perspiration. But in the human condition, pain is a great motivator. So when we are ill, when we're sick and ill, we crave health, and that causes us to change. When we're in a relationship that we're being hurt or criticized or being attacked or being physically or verbally hurt, that's a great motivator to grow and change. And so a lot of times, I mean, just the reality of it, people have to be backed into a corner and in great pain to be willing to change. The very cool thing is if they say, oh, you mean I don't need to have that pain to grow and let go? I mean, the same thing we do with our emotions is we hold on to them, we hold on to them, we hold on to them, and then we get into a place of just complete rage or anger, and then we finally go, oh, maybe I need to grow here. Maybe I need to let go of this. It's like we're so used to letting that tea kettle boil to ultimate pressure and then finally be willing to grow and change. But I hope that any person that hears this will have, like, wow, I don't have to go to ultimate pressure to be happy. Like, choose happiness now. Choose health now. Choose to love yourself now. It is a process. I mean, it's you and I both know that every day there's a layer of stuff that comes up. I like what Pema Chodron says. She says, you know, when I first started the path, I forgave myself 100 times a day. And now, being a Buddhist nun for 30 years, I forgive myself 300 times a day.
Never enough.
I say in Why Self-Acceptance is So Powerful that I think I have a section on it that talks about how the only difference between somebody that's kind of a beginner to the path of self-growth and self-love and the inner work and somebody that would be more of a conscious master, somebody that radiates and embodies peace, joy, happiness, intelligence, truth, the only difference between those two people is the level of their self-compassion, and that's it. So it's not really that all of a sudden that person that's happy and confident doesn't have the craziness come up, doesn't have the insecurities and self-doubt come up. It's just they've learned that it's a lot better for me if I'm willing to grow from this and I'm willing to be gentle with myself in the beginning rather than wait till this becomes blister of pain, and then I finally got to begin to look at my thoughts and forgive myself.
Right. So it's not a panic situation where it's like, oh no, I have to do this. I mean, in your book, Magnificent You, you keep harping on the fact that everybody knows what it is they're supposed to do here, and it might reach a point where they're just simply dissatisfied. They know there's something greater for them. They know that they are not doing what it is they were put here to do on the earth, because they're here to teach people and also to learn. And it might get to the point where they just say, you know what, just for my own self-benefit, I have to change. Yeah. I have to do things differently.
I heard this quote today from this beautiful woman. I'm going to change her name just for confidentiality. But she was in her late 70s, and she was calling initially for her first appointment. And she goes, you know, I'm in my mid-70s now, and I realize that I am not Martha Smith. That's not who I am. And I know that I'm here for my soul's growth. And I really don't know what that means, but you know, I've been reading your articles, and I'm not Martha Smith. I want to come in and find out who I really am. She was so cute. So you're right. It's like we get to a place where we say, you know, it's been fine and good to be this role I've been playing, to be this, whether you're male or female, and to be this job I've been in, and to do this occupation and do all these roles I play in my life, but I'm something far greater. And the beautiful thing is when we start to do the inner work and we continue to do it, we can actually shift our energy or shift our consciousness and become more soul identified. Soul identified meaning more identified with peace, more identified with beauty, more identified not with this body or the name that you put on it or the gender, more identified with those ineffable qualities. And as we begin to embody those, we can actually deliver them into the roles that we're already playing. So sometimes people say, oh, I want to realize my soul's purpose. I want to realize. And they come in and they have sessions and there's this great unfoldment that happens. And they think, oh, I got to, you know, I'm going to change jobs. This is not what I'm supposed to be doing. Or I got to leave this husband. And then as they grow, and I don't tell them this in the beginning because they're not in a place to hear it, but I'll tell the audience now, is when they start to realize a greater identification with those soul's qualities, they start to deliver them in the roles that they're already playing. And they see the roles that they're playing, teacher, mother, doctor, accountant, musician, whatever, they see them start to lift and alter. So many times we think that we've got to change our job, change your spouse, go live in an ashram, do a volunteering program. I've got to make this dramatic change. But it's really that change within that powerfully affects the content of your life, that your consciousness trumps the content, meaning the energy that you bring to something, the intent, your perception, what you seek you shall find, meaning when you shift how you see things, things change. Many times people are not experiencing reality, but more their thoughts about reality. And reality is almost like this banquet of potentials, like this, these different radio station waves that you can be on. And when you shift your radio station wave, just like what the law of attraction talks about, but a little bit deeper, when you shift your radio station wave and you begin to see yourself differently, you begin to see your world differently. And then the roles that you're playing, the occupation, all that begins to be uplifted by your consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Once again, I just want to take a short pause and remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, Station Making Waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. This month, my special guest is Barbara White. She's a spiritual teacher, author, and inspirational speaker. And in addition to all that, you also have put out a CD recently, right? Now, what is a CD about?
The CD is a compilation of spiritual discourses. So it's generally like I'm talking right now about different subjects, and it's done in a meditative way where people can listen to it and be encouraged, uplifted, because we've got to be reminded every day about who we truly are. But they can also put on the CD, and it can allow to it can be a quieting of the monkey mind. And
okay,
and it can entertain the mind. I like to say a lot of times we need to give our mind a bone to chew on. It's so as the mind is listening to the words, they actually can drop more into a quiet, still place. The CD actually was something that I did in a studio with Radish Creative. Radish Creative donated about $10,000 of work, and Matt from Radish Creative donated $10,000 at about 80 session hours of his work on the CD. So I'm so grateful for that CD, because it wouldn't have happened without them.
Mm-hmm. Right, and there's three different tracks. I think we're going to hear something from the first track. What is that called?
The first track is Be Still, and it talks about re-identifying, actually exactly what we were just talking about, re-identifying with your true divine nature. So if we want to play some of that, we can. Beginning by stating the intent, which is always the intent, to encourage, to empower, to uplift you into who you truly are, into your true identity of greatness, your true identity of power. Life, after all, is just a case of mistaken identity. We mistake in ourself as the pain, the suffering, the story. We mistake in ourself for our thoughts, our emotions. But the good news is, you're not what you think you are. You're something far greater, far more powerful, far more magnificent than any book, any person has ever told you. You're more beautiful and more magnificent than I can even tell you in words. And who you truly are can only be felt. The love, the beauty, the radiance that is in your heart right now, waiting to be remembered. You can't make the love in you happen. You can't lose enough weight to remember it, get enough degrees, or help enough people to know what you already are. Who you are and who you have always been is right here, right now. Remembering who you truly are, the power in loving yourself, is because the greatest way to help the world, the greatest way to...
very good. I mean, I can see where they
I can love you when my eyes flow. I see your heart through a blindfold.
Yeah,
I ain't never ever let another
spectacular. It's makes me cry every time I hear it because he just did such an amazing work on it. The CD right now, you would have to go to acceptedasiam.com or call the Healing Center in Plymouth to get the CD. It's supposed to be available on CD Baby, but it's not. But right now people can call the office and I can ship them out one.
Right. You're working on it though.
Yeah, well, they're working on it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I know. You got people, you said, right?
I got people.
So, you know, right. You got to delegate, right?
It's amazing how I always find it. Just I find it so amazing how when you take one tiny step for living your passion, doing what you're supposed to be doing on the planet, people just start showing up to help you. It's
right.
Really amazing. Yeah.
Well, again, like you said, it's putting out the positive energy, though. And in turn, yeah, you will attract the like energy back to you and people will help you along the path. It's really quite amazing, isn't it?
It really is. I'm so grateful to, like, for instance, this cover of Why Self-Acceptance is So Powerful was done by my friend Tara Droz. Her company is Blue Hanyu Designs, H-O-N-U. There's an interesting story behind this owl because during Christmas, I had given gifts to my family my mantra is to give my heart away because I know as I give fully of myself, I get to experience love as me. So I practice that in my family. I practice that with my friends. So in giving my heart away to experience God love as me, I was painting these hearts for my family and giving them away to my family and putting these poems in the back. And I gave one to my dad, and it turned out it was like two hearts merging together and ended up looking just like an owl. And there was this beautiful poem I put on the back that was talked about merging the human and the human self with the soul self, and this purple owl got formed on the gift that I had given my dad. And shortly after Christmas, about a month and a half later, I was ready to publish Why Self-Acceptance is So Powerful, and my friend put the exact owl that I had given to my dad on the cover of the book.
It's pretty amazing.
And her design, Tara's design, is so, I mean, it's just how everything is in, because I know that this work is, I just know that it's awesome. It's from love. It's from God. It's going to help a lot of people. This design she put on the front, my friends at Body Works, Pat and Dave Krajovic, they took it down to the Light Fair down in Columbus, Ohio, and they have a lot of amazing products and crystals. And they were telling me the cover design that Tara Droz did was drawing in so many people that the book cover got more attention than anything else they were selling.
So they're not selling that book anymore, right? So forget it. It's too good.
Yeah, it's and even the person that came in, my friend Jacqueline Matthews, she did the editing of the book, and it's just amazing how people come together to help. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure it probably is quite flabbergasting sometimes. I mean, you just stand there or sit there, and it must take your breath away sometimes, doesn't it?
It really does. It's amazing how if you simply intend to give your heart away every day, to give love, to bless all those, if you intend to bless all that you see. I like to look at people in the face and I say, okay, God, show me. Like when I was sitting here with you and you were getting ready, I said, okay, God, show me. And I just saw this light in you and I just saw this strength in you. I was like, wow. But as you say, God, show me and let me bless all those that I see, and you put that energy out, yeah, it does. It just keeps on coming back. I think our mind is so resistant to that because our mind believes by staying in negativity, by staying in that normality of negativity, it somehow gives us control over the negativity. It's worry and negativity is our mind separate from God, our egoic mind. The mind really believes that gives us a sense of control over it. And we don't realize that a lot of people bless their hearts, just don't realize that when they're in that negativity and they're running those negative stories or in that the kind of worst case scenario stories, they don't realize they're getting that back, and they're getting that back. And those worst case scenario stories are a way. It's a perceived protection. And so they don't realize that perceived protection is actually giving them the very attack that they're seeking to keep from happening.
Right.
So, you know, it's like this, that perceived protection, those defense mechanisms are those worst case scenarios, because it's energetic again, like, you know, it's like that energy that we put out as we're running those worst case scenarios, it just keeps on coming back and keeps on coming back. And then from that place of the worst case scenarios and then getting that stuff back, people begin to believe that the world's attacking them. And what's really attacking them is their own mind. What's really attacking them is their perceived control over the worst case scenarios that they're running. And then when they say, you know what, and then that ties back to our kind of building up to ultimate pressure, where they finally go, you know what, this is really miserable. I am so miserable. I can't handle this anymore. They start to say, you know what, I don't care, mind, if you think that I have to sit there and run this through my mind 1,000 times and try to predict tomorrow and run the worst case scenario and be really responsible of what's going to happen tomorrow. And they finally say, you know, enough's enough. I can't handle this anymore. It's amazing to me how much we have such an agreement with negativity. We're just way too kind of a funny, another funny story. So I had, I've been doing this work now 11 years, 11 years professionally, but really most of my life. And I started collecting, my amazing friend Jacqueline Matthews started doing the marketing. I've never really done marketing. I've never really needed to. It's always been word of the mouth, and I've had tons of business. And now with the books, God has really said, okay, you need to start doing more marketing. Oh, okay. So she started, she got me on Yelp and Google and all those things, and I asked for testimonials from all these people for Yelp. And so people went to Yelp and they started putting all the testimonials on it. And there was a lot of them, and for many years. And we went back to go check them, and none of them were there. None of them were on the site. And we looked, and they all had been filtered out. And we called the company, at least we called the Yelp company, and they said, I'm sorry, all these testimonials were too positive. They weren't realistic. They weren't realistic.
Yeah, like somebody made them up.
Yeah, right? like because didn't have any negativity in it, they filtered them all out. And I'm not telling this story to gloat about my work or anything. I'm telling it because my point is that we have such an agreement with negativity that we don't believe something is realistic unless it has negativity in it. It's not a real, you know, I got to be real. It's like, yeah, reality is what your perception is. Reality is what you focus on. So keep on thinking that you need to be real, because if you keep on thinking you need to be real, that's going to be your reality and your life's going to really suck. So stop thinking you have to be real.
Right. Yeah. Be artificial, right?
Be artificial. Yeah. Well, I mean, be authentic. You know, be decide that negativity is not serving you anymore. Because, well, you know, and initially, actually, when somebody decides that they don't want to be negative anymore, it's going to feel like they're being artificial. It's going to, being more positive or being more loving to themselves and others is going to feel kind of weird. It's going to feel kind of unnatural. It's going to feel maybe for a moment a little artificial. But if they just start to practice that a little bit in their inner work and in their day, they'll see that it's not artificial. It's actually, they're tapping into that creational force of the universe. They're tapping into that flow of grace in their life, and it's more real than this perceived negativity and this agreements with mediocrity and the complaining and the bemoaging and really not bemoaning. What's the word? Bemoaning.
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 Yes. Well, you just made up a new word. You know.
Bemoaning.
We'll give you credit for it.
So, yeah, it's a great risk to grow. It does take your family situation may shift, your friendships may shift, but it's far more painful to remain where you are. Our mind will try to say, you know, this is really hard. This is really hard to do this work. It's hard to change. It actually, the truth is, it takes more energy to stay in illness, to stay in negativity, than it does to actually be in the flow of grace. It's just like a flower. A flower is a flower. It takes more energy if that flower tried to be a cucumber. So if you just let yourself be who you are, if you just let yourself begin to be more authentic, and you don't think that you have to be perfect, you just have to be yourself, it takes a lot less effort than to be this false face or this false self or even to be in this negative self that you've created.
Right, but there again, people have their comfort zone, and that's what they're used to. Whether they like it or not, it's what they know, it's what they want to stay with. And again, that's one of the reasons it makes it so hard, because they may not be happy where they're at, but they're content, or maybe not even content, but they're so used to it that they think that the change would bring even more chaos to their lives. But again, like you said, people that have that attitude, again, they're just mirroring, you know, the same thing from one person to another person, and you're getting the same thing back.
Well, that kind of ties us back to the willingness again, that when somebody's in that place that they don't want to change, and they're kind of, you know, if somebody doesn't want to change and they're kind of content in their life and they don't want things to, if that's what they like, you know, they people don't know that happiness is a birthright. They don't know that they can feel vibrant. They don't have to just be sick, you know, just to suffer and be sick until they die. You know, it's people think that they're going to just suffer through life and then go to heaven. And even as Pope John Paul II said, that heaven and hell is a state of consciousness. So if you are in hell now, there's a very good chance you're going to be in hell when you die as well, because you're just going to leave this physical suit and stay in that state of hell, meaning be happy now. Deal with your stuff now. Don't wait. Don't wait, because – but people, if they don't want to do that, they want to just stay in that limited way of being, you know, that is their choice. You know, it comes back to free will. And people, and they don't know, they have their hand on a hot burner smiling, or they've been taught that to suffer is holy, that it's good to suffer, it's good to hurt, you know, I hurt and I'm in pain, so I am worthy. And they don't realize to embody happiness, to embody beauty, to embody joy is the way to reflect and reveal that divine energy, that we have a mandate and a responsibility to reveal joy, to reveal beauty, to reveal love as ourselves. And if we realize that that's really our purpose, to bring more of heaven into the earth as ourself, then that would change somebody's life. But to effect of what you're saying, as many people have been taught, that's not your purpose. It's your purpose is to follow the rules, go to work, pay your bills, follow, just keep your head down, keep on pushing forward, be a good little girl or boy, and that's your purpose in life. And they may think, that person may think that they're happy, and to that level of happiness, they are. I mean, that's their level of happiness. It's like, you don't know, if you lived in a third world country, you don't know about a computer. You don't know about a supercomputer. So to that person, that level of happiness, so there's no right or wrong. That's their happiness, and bless them, that's their way of being. But there is a way of growing, of evolving beyond that. There is a way of saying, you know, I don't want to just pay bills and suffer till I die. I really want to live in a greater existence. I really want to embody joy. I really want to dance through life. I really want to feel this river of grace moving through me and as me and in me. Ooh, wow, what's that? You know, that usually, you know, tying back to everything we've been saying, that usually is motivated by some great pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think most people in life, as they get, you know, on in life, and maybe they get closer to the end, I think often they don't regret most of the things they've done. They regret the things they haven't done, you know, and that's what they look upon and say, you know, I should have done that years ago, but I didn't. But they can't do anything about it after a while, and I think that is sometimes the sad part. Don't you agree?
You know, I agree, but I also think God or love never forsakes us, meaning even if we've made a mistake in our past, if we choose to benefit from it, if we choose to see the good in it, we can actually move forward, and some infinite potential can come into our life. So if we say, I made a huge mistake there, I had this opportunity, I had this dream, and I didn't do it, I don't want to grow because the pain of really looking at that and realizing it is too much, so I'm just going to stay in this place of misery. Okay, I get that. I get that a lot of people do that. But if you can courageously say, okay, what is the benefit? What am I to learn? How am I to grow from this experience? Then that person can shift that identity, shift that energy, realize that they're always lovable. That mistake that they made, that thing that they missed, doesn't change their lovability. Something that's really important to realize is that we're already lovable. We're already cherished. We don't have to fight for our lovability. We don't have to try to earn it. We can't earn it, really. And when you realize that you have an innate value, that you matter, you are important, that you're already lovable, and yet we're waking up to another level of that. So people want, you know, they want it, you know, black and white. No, you're already lovable. You're already beautiful. You're already handsome. You're already great. And you're waking up to that. And that event in the past doesn't change your lovability. So again, something we think these external things define our lovability or define our divine value. I believe it's the greatest human arrogance to believe we can destroy what God already created. And so to say, I can't destroy my divine identity. I am already lovable. And I don't have to do anything to earn that. That doesn't cause me to go out running the streets and start hurting people. When I realize my lovability, it actually causes me to be more loving. And when I realize that I'm already accepted, I'm already loved, it actually causes me to take those risks that I wouldn't have taken because I'm so afraid to fail. And that, so back to that thing, that dream that we didn't realize, that if we can go, okay, I'm willing to look at this differently, I'm willing to grow from this, we'll reap the benefit of that experience. A person with the intent to love and grow can make a mistake and it turns out good. A person with the intent not to love and grow, not the person with the wrong intent, an intent to hurt themselves or another person, can make the right choice and it turn out wrong. So our intent or our perception really shapes the action. What energy we bring into our life and into our day and how we choose to see the past can really affect today and tomorrow. We have that kind of power in our perception and in our willingness.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how can they do so?
They can go to acceptedasiam.com, or they can call me at the Healing Center, which is 734-455-1438. So acceptedasiam.com, which also has the books, the CDs, the upcoming events, all that is on the website.
Okay, so you don't want to run down some of the events coming
up? Oh, okay, this is the time to do that.
If you want to mention a few, that's fine.
I would love to.
We have a couple minutes left.
Okay, I'll mention a couple of events. Every third Thursday, there is a self-acceptance discourse from 7 to 8:30. 8:30 to 9 is a social connection time. This is a community healing. It's holding the prayer field of love. People are having spontaneous healings in this gathering, and they're walking out knowing more of what the healer they are. Every fourth Thursday, if you go to my website, I'll be going around Michigan holding these circles to do the community healing. This is part of the Health and Inner Peace nonprofit. The second week of December, December 14th, I'm doing a book signing at Body Works. I'm also doing a free workshop at 2 o'clock. Body Works in Plymouth is having a sale for Christmas on all their products, amazing products they have. Every first Tuesday, I do a Women's Empowerment Circle on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio. Every fourth Tuesday, I do the Accepted As I Am radio show on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio. And coming in January, I have all sorts of retreats and workshops that are coming up, so do go to my website. I do a lot of retreats at Song of the Morning up in Vanderbilt. They're phenomenal. So you can check that out at acceptedasiam.com.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Right, that concludes another edition of Metaphysically Speaking. I just want to thank my guest once again, Barbara White. She is a spiritual teacher, author, and inspirational speaker, and she was a inspirational speaker on today's program. I thought she expressed a lot of positive, good thoughts, so you can take those as you want. And anyway, we'll be back next